Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to Ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
Welcome back. It's 34 after. Thanks very much for staying with me. Thanks for hanging out with me. My pleasure to continue to be with you. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. We're glad you did that. If you've been listening already, we consider that a sign of high intelligence. Michael Cox is with us, folks. Michael is the has a long, very impressive resume. Former chief economist at the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank. The co-author of the Pulitzer-nominated book, Myths of Rich and Poor. He is currently the director of the O'Neill Center for Global Markets and Freedom at Southern Methodist University, SMU, and he's our good friend. Mike Cox, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jim. Thanks. Good to be here.
It's good to have you back. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
So Michael, you're a unique talent in that you're an economist, but you think a lot more entrepreneurially than a lot of the economists that I know. You actually have got your finger a little more on the pulse of the marketplace than most of the economists I know. So that makes you kind of a unique talent. As you look out across the landscape, what do you see?
I see a complete change in the attitude of people and their
from what to what?
Six different ways. Well, you know, let's think about what we just left was a recession. We hope we're out of it, although it's not clear that we are.
Right.
But before that, what we really left was a period of unprecedented growth. Over the period from 1982 to 2007,
yep.
We only had 16 months of recession.
Right.
There's never been
And they were wimpy ones.
And it was, yeah, they were like short, 8 months, not very...
Almost, you could almost say, in terms of what we've had and what we had in the early 80s and the 70s, and that you could almost not even call them a recession.
Right. Well, they were a recession by the standard definitions of recession, but GDP did grow even during these recessions.
Yeah.
Because we had a tsunami of growth that was led by the microprocessor that created the computer industry, all the smart products that we use, cell phones, digital cameras, and iPods, and iPhone, all this stuff. And then we also had a rapid round of globalization where 3 billion new capitalists come into the globe. So, I mean, there's some very interesting contrast between six different things back then and those same six things today. Innovation, globalization, credit, consumerism, inflation, and government. We could talk about those if you'd like.
I would like to. I would like that very much.
Well, innovation probably is the first thing I want to point out. That was an extremely innovative period. And we had this push, like I said, of the microchip, and it created so many industries. And so that was yesterday, the 25 years. But today, where are we in that cycle? We're on the back side of that wave. We're not on the push side anymore. There are going to be a lot more technology spillovers, I believe, from the microchip, but they're going to be smaller. And they're going to be, you know, further between. But basically, right now, on the innovation dimension, we're waiting for the next big thing.
Where do you think that's going to come from?
Well, the two things I see coming down the pike, but they're still pretty far, possibly three, is something, you know, something from the Human Genome Project.
Right, the genome.
That's a giant.
Yep.
You know, if we can get that going, and we are starting to, they just claim to have cracked the code for certain kinds of cancer, skin cancer, over the last week. We can get those kinds
but
of
that's
cures
not,
going.
But that's not going to wash over the marketplace like the PC did.
No, it's not. It's not going to have this big spike wave that's 100 feet high.
Right.
It's going to be slow, and it's going to build, but it's going to last longer because what do people care more about than their
own? It's going to have that kind of breakthrough is going to have lasting impact on human beings, but it's not going to wash over the marketplace.
Yes, I agree. So that's one big thing we could have. The next one, I believe, is going to be something like autonomous remote vehicles, but that's about 10 years down the road before we start to incorporate that perhaps into our highways. We have the technology to do it now, but this is where America could take the lead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we worry about our auto industry. Well, we should be so far advanced
than
the rest of the world. We should be making the most sophisticated high-tech cars, driving on superhighways, guided by LIDAR, radar. So it's already happening. If you go look at the website, if you go look up... the DARPA Challenge. Mm-hmm. GARPA gives prizes every year to people who can make cars go without people.
GARPA, G-A-R-P-A Challenge?
Yeah, the DARPA Challenge. Just Google DARPA Challenge.
D, with a D?
Yeah, DARPA. Like
DARPA Challenge, okay.
Research.
All right. Okay. So,
and that's a possibility.
We've rested on our laurels here, haven't we?
Sorry?
In America, we've rested on our laurels with regard to a lot of industries like the automobile industry, haven't we?
Well, I would characterize it differently. I'd say the labor unions ruined it.
Yeah.
You know, they got in there and picked every piece of fruit off.
But management was codependent there. Mike, you can't take anything. You got to lay the blame at the foot of management too. They went along by going along. Hold on to that thought. We're gonna take a quick break, folks. Fascinating conversation with our good friend Michael Cox. You don't want to miss the rest of this. 20 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us.
The money, two for the show, three to get ready. Now go, cat, go, don't you step on my blue suede shoe.
Little Carl Perkins bringing us back. One of the classics, 17 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Thanks for staying with me. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you for going there and checking it out, using it to your advantage. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. And if you're on Twitter, you want to follow me there, I'm at Jim Blassingame. W. Michael Cox. That's the name on the book, Myths of Rich and Poor, which is the book he co-authored with Richard Alm that was a Pulitzer Prize-nominated book, outstanding book. He is the director of O'Neill Center for Global Markets and Freedom at the Cox School of Business at Southern Methodist University, and a former chief economist at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, and our good friend, longtime member of our Brain Trust, coming up on 10 years. Next year will be our 10th year with Michael as a member of our Brain Trust. And Michael, we're talking about some of the things that you see that are going to be different in the future. You were talking about innovation. You were telling us about the three things that are going to be big in innovation. Surely energy is one of the three.
Well, I think we're overdoing it in terms of our expectations of that. There are so many solutions to global warming. I mean,
I'm not talking about global warming, but is there any reason why, if America wanted to, we could be the global leader in energy innovation for this century?
No reason at all. In terms of energy innovation, exactly right. You know, I like to say God didn't give us enough oil to be able to pump it forever, but he gave us enough to know how to get it out of the ground and learn about it.
Right.
And we have definitely done that. We are leaders in world technology. In fact, that's one of our chief export industries and service export industries. We export a lot of mining services to the rest of the world, and our businesses that are paying attention to that are doing really, really well.
Right.
If your readers could see something, I would show them a graph of the relationship between per capita income and per capita consumption of oil, and this is a very, very, very tight relationship. We're using the most recent data, but what's really interesting is that, of course, the two largest countries in the world, China and India, with a combined population of 2.5 million, parked right there in the middle, poised to experience tremendous growth in demand.
Yeah.
I think that's going to continue, but I think we're going to continue to burn fossil fuels because, first of all, it's the most economical way to do it. There is, right now, an externality. But just think of the dollars to be made by removing that externality, and that's what so many people are working on. I can name you 10 ways that people have come up with for either removing carbon from the air or keeping carbon from going into the air. I think, honestly, this sounds probably crazy to some of the scientists now, but this is going to be a non-problem.
But almost, Mike, isn't that kind of a negative? I mean, obviously, we want less carbon to be in the air atmosphere. But isn't that going to take some of the pressure off of innovation? I mean, there is such a thing as peak oil, Mike. We're going to run out of oil one of these days. We're going to run out of natural gas one of these days. We've got to come up with alternative energies.
We don't have to do it in an economical way, though.
I agree with that. But my point is, if somebody could get rid of all the carbon influence of burning carbon fuels in the environment, That would take the pressure off of innovation.
That's what I'm saying. It takes it off in an unnatural way. That would happen naturally anyway.
Right, right.
You know, as the price of oil gets high, it encourages conservation, and it also gives money to companies to fuel other kind of research. Exxon's doing that. Exxon has 10,000 scientists working on things.
Right.
So,
what's another example of what you see coming at us in the future?
You talking about in terms of innovation?
No. The next after innovation, you had a list of six.
Okay. Globalization has changed a lot from the last 25 years to the next 10. Here we're making comparisons from 82 to 2007, that 25-year period, to the next decade. Okay, in the last 25 years, we had the explosion of global production from China and India and so on, the rest of the world. Next 10 years, going to be the normal pattern of things, the explosion of global consumption. And U.S. companies that sell abroad, market abroad, and find that global customer are going to do fantastically. You see that already in a lot of American companies who have discovered the Chinese customer, like Yum Brands over there marketing their chicken and their pizza and so on. Insco with the engineering businesses we're talking about in the energy industry. Just, I can name you 50 different companies which have said, I don't need to tap into the U.S. market to ride growth. I need to ride the fast growth of the company.
Well, you know, and you know, Michael, in this segment, in the previous hour, I just had Fred Hochberg on the show, who is the president and chairman of Ex-Im Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we've been trying to do on the show is to connect the dots between American exporters and the finding customers through the Department of Commerce, which they will help you do, and connecting the financial dots and filling the gaps with Ex-Im Bank. And you put those three things together, an American exporter with the Department of Commerce, with the Ex-Im Bank, and you got business.
Yeah, that's right.
Global business.
So, and the next one, Jim, let me just compare some credit, past, present. Credit in the past, trust. We trust people with our money. Company executives, folks who manage your money, and based on all that trust, of course, we had an awful lot of corrupt individuals enter to the arena and take advantage of us. So the next era is going to be skepticism. It is already apprehension in both senses of the word, apprehending criminals and apprehensive lenders. And so credit is going to be difficult, and it's going to be a completely different game from the past.
And this is the thing that's the most different about this recession and this recovery from any of the others in my life.
Exactly. Mike. This is a credit recession in the truest sense of the word, in that the word credit comes from the Latin word credo, which means I trust you.
Which is part of credibility.
Right. And if you know, without credit, there's no economy. This is capitalism. It runs on capital.
Yeah.
Consumerism is another theme. In the past, I would say it would be characterized by too much ain't enough.
Yeah.
He who dies with the most toys wins. Spend all your income. Take out a home equity loan. Spend that
too. That's been reset. That's been reset, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Hold on to that thought. We're going to take a quick break, folks. More fascinating insights from our good buddy Michael Cox, the co-author of Myths of Rich and Poor. Still an outstanding book. Stay with us. Tintel, right back.
At least the mystery is gone.
Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Thanks very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. Michael Cox is our guest. He is director of the O'Neill Center for Global Markets and Freedom at Southern Methodist University there in Texas. Michael, tell us how we can find you. What's the website?
O'NeillCenter.com.
O'NeillCenter.com. All right.
O-N-E-I-L.
Right. And they can find out about you. They can find out about the center, the school. And what about you? You have your own blog or anything?
No, I don't blog. You know, I just don't. Not me.
You will.
Okay.
You will. I'll help you.
Okay.
Hey, all right, Michael, you were talking. By the way, folks, Mike's a world-class economist. He's one of the most astute marketplace guys that I know, and you know I know a lot of folks like that. Michael, you were just telling us about innovation, told us globalization is a big deal, consumerism is a big deal, credit, we talked about those things.
We didn't talk about credit tomorrow. Credit yesterday was too much ain't enough.
Yep.
Spend all your income, spend the home equity loan, your stocks are rising faster than you ever imagined, so borrow against it, blah, blah, blah. But tomorrow, of course, it's today. I mean, well, savings is chic. Austerity is in vogue. The excessive consumerism lifestyle is just too stressful. People older, they want the stress, and they've learned to go to shop at consignment stores. It's nothing shameful anymore.
Yeah.
Right? Then the next theme is inflation. Yesterday was bad. Cut it. The Fed thought we need to do and cut inflation, get the price stability. That was the goal. Greenspan was set out zero inflation his goal, and the result was that we got down to about 2.5% inflation, but the result was it got too close to inflation. In my opinion, the Fed took it too close to deflation during a very critical time, and we wound up with the mess. But we can come back and talk about that on another program. I think tomorrow, it's what we see, we'll get inflation. It's bad, but better than recession. So increase it. You're going to see some inflation.
A little inflation is good for us.
Right. Well, I think that we're going to see 4 to 5% inflation.
Yeah.
Enough to be sure it's here and to restore values of real estate and so on, because real estate values go up or down by a multiple of.
Well, remember when we have inflation, then small business owners have some pricing power. As long as it's something we can control and we can manage, small business owners get pricing power. We get can pass along our increases, and we can make profit. When you got a situation like this, prices may not be we may not be in a deflationary period technically, but from a standpoint of pricing and pricing power of small businesses and their profit, their bottom line profit, we are in a deflationary period for that.
Given the way the price index is measured, given that I think that it's overestimating inflation by not putting new goods into the price index as soon as they come out, we are, I think, in a deflationary period. The last theme here is the one of government, and the 82 to 2000 quarter century theme was less, right? Reagan came in, income tax rates were cut.
Yep.
They were deregulated, privatized, had freer trade, smaller
even in the Clinton
less
administration.
Capitalism work in America, it brought down the Soviet Union, led to economic reform in China and India.
Abolished welfare, in America, cut it way back in the Clinton administration.
That's right. Tomorrow, more government, bigger government, like it or not.
Yeah, globally.
It's really just like it or not.
We're talking globally here.
And but I'm talking about the U.S. because you have to be a world leader, but we're going the wrong direction. But the view today, which is incorrect, is that capitalism failed us. Government must increasingly force itself back into markets to help. Income tax rates are going to have to rise. All this debt's out there. And there's just systematic destruction of capitalist principles going on, especially in the current administration.
One of the main reasons that we have what we have right now is the government playing around with capitalism. Trying to influence capitalism.
I don't even understand what it is. It's based on incentives to work, to invest, to innovate, to start companies and so on. People have to have those incentives to do productive risk-taking. If you take all the money away for taking a risk or for working, or you tax it, or you reward people for not working, you might as well just go ahead and take us over to the Soviet Union.
You can't combine the stimulus to need to be reelected with the stimulus to make a good investment.
Well, you can, but then they are.
You can't do it successfully.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I understood your point. I just wanted to make the point that
You're right.
And it's...
Because they only have one monolithic goal, and that's to be reelected. And
the
marketplace is more complex than that.
A lot of that money that should have been spent last year to stimulate the economy, they saved it for election time in order to get votes.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, Michael, I think it's going to take a revolution in this country to fix this.
But are you familiar with the Teitler cycle? Of Alexander Teitler, Fraser Teitler? You folks should go read that. It's a cycle it's called the fatal sequence. It starts with bondage.
Yeah.
Countries tend to move from bondage to great faith, from great faith to courage, from courage to abundance, to liberty. Have a revolution.
Right.
From liberty to abundance, from abundance to apathy, and then complacency, and then back to dependence, led government, and then back to bondage. Well, right now, in that cycle, we're not right there.
We're on the downhill slide based on that. What's the name of it again?
The Teitler cycle. Alexander Teitler. T-Y-T-E-R.
All right. Teitler.
Hey, Teitler.
T-Y-T-L-E-R. Yeah. Hey, Michael, thanks for being here. Good job today. It's fascinating always to have you here.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time. Michael Cox, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back. I will be, too. But it'll be tomorrow. I'm Jim Blasingame, reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.